Well, good morning. And as Cindy said, welcome. For those of you who are with us for the first time, we're very excited to have you. And you have walked into an interesting conversation. And if you weren't here with us last week, I highly encourage you to go back and listen to it. You're also unaware of just how grateful the rest of us are of the temperature in this room. Some of you walked in and you're preparing for what we've been experiencing with our air conditioner struggling a bit. And so you walked in short sleeves and now you're like, oh my goodness, I'm a little cold. I don't know what I'm going to do. And we're just trying to confuse you as much as possible. And but you've walked into an interesting series where we're tackling a powerful question and looking at this question of what do you do when there's nothing you can do? What do you do when you find yourself in one of those circumstances or one of those situations where this is just a problem that has no answer? This is a situation that there's no way out of, at least no good way out of. You find yourself in a situation where financially you realize there may be a day when you get out of your situation, but because of circumstances or situations or decisions, you know that this is just going to be your reality for a long time. Or you got a call from the doctor and it's not going to kill you, but it's going to drastically change your life. And that's just the way that it is. And there's nothing that you can do about it. Or that person that you thought you were going to spend the rest of your life with, that person you thought that you were going to marry, that relationship's gone. And it just is what it is. And there's nothing that you can do. There's no way that you can change it. And there's all these temptations that come in. There's a temptation to run. There's a temptation to bail. There's the temptation to try to escape it, to cover it up. There's all these temptations that come in and they're kind of options, but you realize that if you take those options, it's only going to get worse. And there's this thing inside of you that says, you know what, just start over with a new family or a new marriage or and it's going to get better, but you know it's not actually going to get better. It's only going to get worse, but the temptation is there. What do you do when there's nothing you can do? And if you weren't with us last week, again, I highly encourage that you go back and listen to it, because last week we set the foundation and we answered and addressed what is probably the core lie or the most important lie that begins to come into our lives when we find ourselves in these situations, that if this is happening in my life, then it must be that God is absent. It must be that God's abandoned me. It must be that God gave up on me. It must be that God's apathetic. He just doesn't care anymore. It must be that God's angry. Maybe I did something wrong. But as we looked through the scriptures, we saw that even in the lives of those that God cared about deeply, that Jesus cared about and knew, that there was still adversity, that they still found themselves in these in-the-meantime moments. And we saw that there seems to be no connection between adversity and the love that God has for you. And even in these individuals' lives, even though God cared deeply for them, even though He knows exactly what was going on, they still found themselves in these situations. And we saw that it's not true. That just because you're in one of these moments, God is not absent. He's not apathetic. He's not angry. That He cares deeply for you and for me. We began to lay this foundation. We talked about some of the other lies that come in with these situations. And we looked at how as we're in these situations, all of a sudden we can begin to believe that we're never going to be happy again. We can begin to believe that there's nothing good that could ever come out of this. We begin to believe that there's no point in continuing. It's amazing how these situations can rob our lives so quickly of joy and hope and purpose. And so last week, as we came to the end, I just challenged you with a couple of statements, just to remind yourself over and over again as we walk through this series of a couple of statements. And I told you as we walked out, just as we walk through this, just remind yourself that no, it's not that those things aren't true, that you actually can be happy, that something good can come from this. And this idea that there's a purpose to this pain. And it's been interesting because as we walked out of last week, I received a little bit of pushback on that. And I want to take just a second to clarify because I think there's a little bit of misunderstanding in that, because I think some of you, as you walked out, you thought, you're saying that I'm going to be happy about what's happened. The truth is that for some of us, we're in situations, you're never ever going to be happy about what happened. You're never ever going to be happy about the situation that you're in. You're never ever going to be happy about what you had to walk through or what you had to experience. I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying is this. There's this lie in these situations that your circumstance or that situation or that moment or what happened that is going to taint, that is going to poison everything else in your life, and you are never going to be happy again. I think God tells us that, listen, that's not true. And it's not the idea that, oh, you know what, one day we're going to joke about this. You're never going to joke about it. But it's a lie that the situation or the circumstance, this season of life, that it's going to, in some way, shape, or form, poison the rest of your life, and that you're never going to be happy again. I think for some of us too, we misunderstood this idea that, okay, something good can come from this. I'm not saying that you're going to get down the road and at some point in your life you're going to look back and say, well, you know what, when I look at the good that's come from this, I'm really glad that it happened. Well, you know, if I take out the scale and I look at the good, it definitely outweighs the bad, and so I'm really grateful for it. That's not what I'm saying. When you hear people who've walked through this and experienced God in these situations, in these moments, that's not what you hear. Usually what you hear is something like this. You know what? I'd never wish it on anyone. You know what? I'd never choose it. You know what? I'd never want to go through it again. But look what God did. And there's this lie. There's this lie that nothing good can... I'm not saying that the good is going to, that you're going to look back and say, oh, it's worth it. But it's a lie that nothing good can come from it. And then today I want to spend a little bit of time talking about this third one, because I think there's a misunderstanding in this idea of purpose as well. This idea of there's a purpose to the pain. And as we do that, what I want to do is I want to take you to the story of an individual who, in the scriptures, and the great thing about this conversation is that as you walk through the New Testament, there are no shortages of situations in which you find people in these circumstances. And you see individual after individual after individual who encounters these types of situations. And so we have all of these examples of people who've walked through situations, circumstances, moments like this in their life, and how they engage and experience God. But there's one in particular that I want to take you to. It's in the life of an individual named Paul. And Paul, for those of you who don't know his story, has a phenomenal story. I mean, this guy and what he did is just amazing. And his story has this crazy twist in it, because Paul, when he starts out, he thinks that the church is against God. And so he's actually going out and he's trying to destroy Christians. He's trying to destroy the church. He hates the church. As a matter of fact, for some of you, you walked in today because your friend invited you, but you really don't like Christians. You would love Paul. There are some Christians you wish were dead. He actually killed them, right? And so you see this guy, and he has this, and he thinks that he's doing God a favor in doing this, until one day he actually encounters God. And God steps into his story and says, listen, what are you doing to my people? And it changes his life forever, and he begins to live his life on mission unlike anyone else. As a matter of fact, when you pick up a Bible and you look at the scriptures, and you look at the scriptures that were written after Jesus Christ lived, a majority of them, a huge amount of them, are written by this individual named Paul. And he starts living his life on this mission, and he is going and going, and he is seeing so many people come to know Christ. He's literally like the Energizer Bunny of missionaries. It just, every time you turn around, he just keeps going and going and going and going and going, and he's in a new city, and more people, and another church has started, and this has happened, and this has happened. And you see all of this stuff happening. But there's a point, as he's writing to the church at Corinth, that he opens the window just a little bit for us to be able to see something in his life that I think is huge for us in this conversation. He opens the window just a little bit to be able to expose us to an in-the-meantime situation in his own life. But he doesn't just share with us the situation. More importantly, he shares with us his journey in it. And it's really short. It's in the midst of an interesting conversation because he's having a conversation with the Corinthians about his role in the church and all this stuff. And he's talking about how God's used him. He's talking about his strengths. But then in just a moment, he talks about his weaknesses. And as he talks about his weaknesses, he opens the window for us to be able to see this little in the meantime moment in his life. Let me take you to this passage. It's found in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And we're going to pick up in verse 7. And it's kind of halfway. The beginning of the verse starts halfway through a sentence. And he's been talking about some of his strengths, but then he begins to transition in verse 7 into his weaknesses. It says this. It says, even though I have received such wonderful revelations from God, so to keep me from being proud, he says, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger from Satan to torment me and keep me from becoming proud. And just really quickly in this moment, he breaks in. He says, let me tell you about his strengths. He said, but then also let me tell you about this thorn that I have. And as he goes into it, most theologians believe and agree that he doesn't have to go into detail about what it is because people know about it. He says, this thorn that I have. And he begins to talk about it. He says, as he gets to the end, he says it torments him. And we're going to talk about some of the other phrases around it here in just a little bit. This idea to keep me from being proud and this idea of a messenger from Satan. But first, I just want you to be able to realize what he's sharing with us here, that he's sharing with us one of his own in the meantime situations, that there's something in Paul's life that in this word torment that he uses here, it literally means to be beaten up. It's the idea that you would use of a bully who beats up someone. And he says, there's this thing in my life that is just constantly, it's just beating me up and beating me up and beating me up and beating me up and leaving me at the end of myself. Some people think that it has to do with his eyesight coming out of the Damascus Road, and there's evidence that he couldn't necessarily write the way that he wanted to or read the way that he wanted to. Other people think that it had to do with epilepsy, that Paul may have had epilepsy and that even as he was publicly speaking that this would happen, and so it was humiliating and it was limiting, but whatever it is, it was a huge deal in Paul's life. And he uses this word torment, that this thing is just this constant, and even the picture that he describes of a thorn, right? There's this thing that's just this constant pain, this constant, and it's just wearing on him and beating him up, beating him up, beating him up. He says, I have this thing in my life. It's very likely because of the time that he had spent with him, the Corinthians knew exactly what he was talking about as he brings it up. But again, it's interesting because he doesn't just share what the situation is. He doesn't just share that I have this thorn, but then he goes on to share how he's engaged it. And as he goes on, you see that he actually does what we do. And so he continues, he says, I have this thorn in my flesh, a messenger from Satan to torment me and to keep me from being proud. And then he says, three different times I begged the Lord to take it away. He does exactly what we do. He says, so you know what I did? Three different times, I asked God, I went to God and I begged him to take it away. And I don't think that he's saying, like, you know, at breakfast and at lunch, at dinner, three times I prayed that God would take it away. Like, he's talking about something bigger than that. He's talking about something more substantial than that. I think he's actually talking about three different periods of his life where he just got to the point where he's like, listen, I can't take this anymore. I can't do this anymore. This is so, it's limiting, it's humiliating, it's debilitating, it's keeping, and I think for Paul, a huge part of it had to be how it impacted what God had called him to do, because his whole life was lived on mission. And then he's got this thing that's just constantly, constantly tormenting him. So I'm living in the midst of this mission. And as I'm on this mission, I've got this thing that just will not go away. And I went to God three different times. I went to God and I just begged him, God, please, please take this away. And he had to have been in the conversation with God where he's saying, God, I mean, you're the one who called me to do this. You're the one who told me that I'm supposed to be the apostle to the Gentiles. I'm supposed to be the one who's out there planting churches. And then I have this thing and it's holding me back. Why would you do this to me? This is three different times. And I think this is actually a little bit encouraging. And I say a little bit, but I think that this is actually a little bit encouraging, because I think it says to us, first and foremost, that it's okay to ask God to take it away. As a matter of fact, it's right to ask God to take it away. And Paul goes into this, and he says, I have this thing, and it's just, so I did what we all do. I went to God and I asked him to take it away. And it must have been really interesting for people to watch Paul interact with this, because you have to remember, Paul's healing people. And he's restoring other people back to health. And as he's restoring other people back to health, he has this thing that won't go away. Paul says three different times, I ask God to take it away. Then he continues. He says, each time he said, my grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. He said, you guys, you know that thing that I have, that thorn in my flesh, it torments me. He says, three different times I asked God, begged God to take it away. And each time, he said, no. He said, no. What's it like to be Paul, where Paul's healing people and he's just living with this? So he said no, but he doesn't just say no. He says no with a promise. Listen to it again. It says, three different times I begged the Lord to take it away. Each time he said, my grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. I actually think it's translated better than the NIV, where it says this. He says, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And Paul, as he opens this window, just really quickly, he gives us a picture of how he's experiencing something, of how he's experiencing something that he actually talked to the Romans about. Because when he writes to the church at Rome, he tells them something about their in the meantime experiences. Listen to what it says. This is actually a pretty popular passage. Sometimes it's a little bit misunderstood. But Romans chapter 8, beginning of verse 28, it says this. It says, "And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them." Now sometimes people misunderstand this and they say, well, okay, God's going to use everything to make you rich, and God's going to make you use everything to give you everything you ever dreamed of. And God, that's not what he's talking about here. As a matter of fact, he goes on and he talks about the purpose, right? He says, "For God knew his people in advance and he chose them to become like his son." He says, listen, you need to understand something. And he's writing to the Romans. He says, you have these things in your life, and sometimes you're going to ask God to take them away, and he's going to. And here's the amazing thing about it. And I think, again, when you go back to the beginning of that passage, I think it's encouraging because Paul's teaching us, no, listen, you need to ask God to take them away, and you need to believe that God can take them away, and sometimes he's going to. And it's going to be amazing. It's going to be awesome. He says, but you also need to understand that sometimes he's going to say no. But he doesn't just say no, he says no with a promise. It's exactly what he talked to the Romans about. That listen, when he doesn't take it away, one of the things that you can know is this, that he will not leave it without purpose. And so he says to the Romans, it doesn't matter what you encounter. It doesn't matter what comes into your life. It doesn't matter why it comes into your life. Here's what you know. Here's what you know. When God doesn't take it away, he is going to use it for a purpose in your life. He is going to use it for your good. And it doesn't matter why it came in. And I just want to clarify this really quickly as well, because the scriptures teach us that these situations, that they come into our lives for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes it's because of sin. Sometimes it's because of our own sin. Sometimes it's because of someone else's sin. And we've decided to step out of the will of God. And when we step out of the will of God, there are really painful things that happen. And I want to be super clear about this, guys. Make no mistake about it. Not everything that happens in your life is the will of God. Not everything that happens in your life is the will of God. This is why Jesus says, listen, when you pray, here's what I want you to pray. I want you to pray that God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Why? Because it isn't always done on earth as it is in heaven. And sometimes pain enters our lives because of our sin. Sometimes pain enters our lives because of other people's sin. Sometimes pain enters our lives because of the brokenness of the world. And God tells us that the world around us is broken. Sometimes pain enters our lives because God is doing something powerful. But what he says to the Romans and what he's experiencing here, he says, listen, it doesn't matter why. As a matter of fact, when he's talking about his own self, he says that the reason the pain came into his life is because the enemy wanted to destroy him. Remember that first verse where he says, "I've received this thorn in the flesh, a messenger from Satan." I believe that what he's saying here is that the enemy was trying to destroy me. And so the enemy brought this into my life. But as he's talking to the Romans and as he demonstrates at the end, it doesn't matter why it came into my life. Here's what I know, that God has promised me that it will not be without a purpose, and that he can give a purpose to whatever it is that comes into my life. And that he will give purpose to whatever it is that comes into my life. And that as I engage it, that his grace will be sufficient for me to walk through it. And so as he continues, he says, So I've stopped fighting God about it. And I've started to walk with God in it. Listen to how he says this at the end. As he comes to the end of talking about this, he says, "So now I am glad to boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ can work through me. That is why I take pleasure in my weakness and in the insults, hardships, persecutions, and troubles that I suffer for Christ. For when I am weak, then I am strong." He says, but as I engaged God in this and I begged him, "God, you've got to take this away. You've got to take this away. You've got to take this away." He says, as I engaged God in it, the truth is that God said, "No, And let me just take one second here really quickly to talk about this, because some of you believe that the way that you get rid of the circumstance of the situation is that you just have to have more faith than the people around you. You just have to have more faith than anyone else. Listen to me. I think it's crucial that we believe God, that God can't. Paul obviously believed that God could take this away. But I think this passage teaches us that sometimes, even when you have incredible faith, listen, Paul had more faith than all of us combined. Even when you have incredible faith, sometimes God's answer is going to be no. But no with a promise. My grace is going to be sufficient for you. And my power is going to work in and through you in this. And Paul says, as I've encountered this, I've stopped fighting God about it. And I've started to walk with God in it. And not just in this specific situation or circumstance, but even when it comes to the other things around it, he says, that's why I take pleasure in my weaknesses and in the insults and hardships. He says, I just engage all of these things completely differently than I used to. He says, it's all changed for me. And if there's anyone who was well acquainted with in the meantime circumstances, it was Paul, because this isn't the only one. As a matter of fact, you find him in prison multiple times where he's just stuck. I mean, if there's anywhere that this question applies to, what do you do when there's nothing you can do? It's got to be prison. And he finds himself in these situations over and over again. He says, I've just learned how to be able to engage these situations. And it's not that God's going to open the doors for me and let me out of prison like he did for Peter. I got to stay in prison. Peter gets out of prison. I don't know what's going on here. But he says, it's not that God's always going to say yes. He says, sometimes God's going to say no, and I can know in those moments that God will not waste one moment of my pain. That God never wastes a pain. I can know in those moments. That he will give purpose to this situation, no matter why it was brought in. He says, Satan brought this into my life for one purpose. God's going to give it a different purpose. And I know, as we walk through this, I understand. Some of you are sitting here, and you're listening to me, and you're thinking to yourself, that sounds great, whatever, Chris, whatever. There's a purpose that doesn't make me feel any better about this. And the truth be told, truth be told, this is not something you learn in a room like this. This is not something you come to know in a room like this, because you don't learn this intellectually. You don't. You have to experience this with God. You have to experience it with him. Some of you have heard me talk over the course of this past year about the fight that God and I had at the beginning of last year, I think. I'm losing track of time, but that happens when you have three kids. But some of you have heard me talk about this and just this back and forth that him and I were in as Cale was beginning to go to school. And as Cale was beginning to step into school, for those of you who don't know, my second son has Down syndrome, and so his state therapy ends when he turns 3 years old, so he has to start school when he's 3 years old. And as he was stepping into or preparing for school, all of a sudden I began to realize that a lot of what I needed to work through with the fact that my son had been born with Down syndrome, I had never worked through. And I thought that I'd worked through it, but the truth is you don't work through those things in a moment. It takes time. And as he was beginning this process of getting into school, I began to realize that I really hadn't worked through it specifically as it pertained to God and God's role in it. And And as he was getting ready to go to school, we began to realize that the school that we wanted for him to go to, that specialized in Down syndrome and was doing really amazing things with kids with Down syndrome, that it probably wasn't going to be available to him. And it looked like Hoboken was going to send him to a classroom that was a special education classroom where he would be surrounded by basically five or six hyperactive kids that would be about twice his size. If you've ever met Cale, he's small. He's pretty weak. And so it became really apparent as we were walking through this that he was probably going to spend most of his days, if he stayed inside of Hoboken, being bullied. And as we were walking through this process, we began to ask some serious questions about whether or not we were going to stay in Hoboken or whether or not we were going to try to move to Weehawken, and where would Weehawken put him and what would this look like, or were we going to have to sue the school board? And as we're walking through this whole process, all these things started to come up inside of me, and I began to realize that I wasn't just mad at God about this situation. I was mad at God about the fact that Cale had Down syndrome at all. And the more that we walked through the decision, the more and more angry I became, and the more and more frustrated I became with God in this in-the-meantime situation, and just realizing that this wasn't a situation where it was going to be hard for a little bit and then it was going to get easy, but that it was just going to be hard a lot. And as soon as we got through one milestone, there was just going to be another milestone around the corner. And it seemed that no matter where we made progress, there was just more difficulty. And I know that after the service, many of you are going to come up to me and tell me about the beauties of Down syndrome. I understand that. And some of you are going to come up to me and you're going to say to me, you know what, God, Chris, God picks special people for special projects. And about the 50th time that I heard that, I wanted to kick someone in the face. Because I didn't want to be the special person. I didn't want my kid to be the special project. I didn't want to walk through the things that he was going to have to hear people say to him. And I was sick and tired of watching my wife cry herself to sleep because her son would go on trips and couldn't come home and talk to her about it. I was sick and tired of watching my son try to communicate with us and know that no matter how hard he tried, it was going to be a long time before he'd be able to talk. I was sick and tired of all of it. And the school was just the surface. And I was just coming face to face with the in-the-meantime nature of this situation, that this was going to be our life. And I started to get angry. I started to get real angry. I was like, God, I don't understand you. I don't understand what you're doing. I remember sitting in a situation and they were training us. There were different church planters in the room and they were training us to coach other church planters. And so we were practicing with one another. And we were walking through a situation that was happening here at the church, and the guy who was coaching me, he's like, Chris, do you believe that God's in control? And he was trying to make me feel better about what was happening. I said, Chris, do you believe God's in control? And there's something snapped inside of me, and I looked back at him, and I said, Glenn, does that make you feel good? That God's in control? Does that make you feel safe, Glenn? Because it doesn't make me feel safe. He didn't know what to do. He felt like climbing under the desk. Poor guy. I was so angry. And usually in those circumstances, to be honest with you, God's usually pretty gentle with me, and he does a phenomenal job of showing me his love. But this time it was different. And I think it's because he wanted for me to be able to know what Paul's talking about here. And so he decided, listen, we're not going to take this gentle. We're going to, let's push a little bit. So he decided he was going to push me. I remember I was at a conference, and it was just a short amount of time before the decision was going to be made about school. I think Anna had actually called me to tell me that the child who was in line in front of us to have this decision made about them, that they had been denied the school that we wanted Kale to go to. So now is a real possibility that we were going to have to sue or we're going to have to move. And I'm trying to figure out, God, you told me that you wanted me in Hoboken, and we made a 20-year commitment to the city that we were going to give our lives to this city. And so I began to pray, and I began to engage him in this, and I was just so frustrated. I'm like, God, why don't you do something? Why is this happening? But again, rather than him being gentle, he just pushed me, and he brought back to my mind a memory that I had of someone that I worked with who had Down syndrome when I was in college. And it was one of those situations where you could tell they'd basically just been left in a room for most of their life. No one had invested in this person. Their social worker was borderline abusive. It was awful. And he brought back to mind that memory because he knew that this was my worst fear. This is what I was afraid of, is that he would go into this school system, that he would just end up where no one ever cared about him, no one ever invested in him. He never saw his potential. And he brings this memory back to me. And then he said to me, it's one of the few times that I've heard God very clearly in my life. He said to me, Chris, will you sacrifice your son to do what I've asked you to do? It would have been better for me if he had shown me an image of Kale in a casket. Said, not only are you going to say no, but you're going to ask me what I'm going to do if it gets worse. And guys, I'll be honest with you, because I think honesty is crucial in these conversations. I don't curse. I don't even curse in my head. I worked on it a long time ago in my life. I just don't. I was sitting there in that situation, and he asked me, Chris, are you willing to sacrifice your son? It's not going to get, what if it doesn't get better? What if not only do I say no, but what if it actually gets worse? Chris, are you willing to sacrifice your son for me to do what I've asked you to do? And I said to him, you know what? F*** you. I was furious. And he says back to me, I gave my son for you. I said, I don't care. He said, I don't care. And I began a fight with God. A fight. I said, God, how could you do this? How could this? What's wrong with you? How could you possibly be good? And here's the thing, guys. Here's the thing. As God began to walk with me in that fight, I scheduled a time. And I walked out of that conference, and from the moment I walked out of that conference, I scheduled a time where I said, you know what? We're just going to take a few days, God, and we're going to fight. And if I have the option, and if I could, I would throw swings. We're just going to take a few days, and we're going to fight. And I went away with him. And we sat down. And guys, I can't explain to you what happened. I can't tell you 3 or 4 steps to get there. But I can tell you this. God unleashed his grace on me. like I've never experienced before in my life. God unleashed his grace on me like I have never experienced before in my life. And he began to work powerfully in me and through me in ways that I have never, ever seen. And I can't tell you 9 steps to be able to make this a reality in your life. And the truth is that it is unrealistic for us to sit here today and for me to say, you know what, you need to be able to walk out of here and flip the switch because God's got a purpose for your pain. That's not the way that this works. I think that whether you look at the life of Paul or whether you look at Jacob, what you find is that as you're in these moments, there's a couple different things that can happen. Number one, you can become angry and you can leave God. Number two, you can become an acquaintance with God. And that's what some of you have done as you've encountered these pains in your life. You've just decided, you know what, God, I'm just going to keep you at a distance and I'm just going to push it down and I'm not going to deal with it anymore. I'm just going to hold you out here. And you just become an acquaintance with God and you don't really know him and you're not really willing to have those real conversations because part of you thinks that you can't actually be real with God. You can either leave, you can become an acquaintance, or you can wrestle. And what I want to challenge you with today is to wrestle through this with God. To wrestle through this with God. Don't just hide it. Don't just push it aside. But to wrestle through it with him and to be real and honest and to ask the hard questions and to work through the real answers. There's a story in the Old Testament of a man named Jacob. And there's a moment in Jacob's life where he's all alone, and God actually comes in the midst of the night, and he begins to wrestle with Jacob. And as they're wrestling, it's this picture of Jacob's life, because his whole life he's just been wrestling with God and trying to go his own way. But this time the story changes, because this time as he's wrestling with God, God reaches down, and he touches Jacob's hip, and it comes out of socket, meaning that Jacob has lost the fight. But as the story continues, it says that Jacob wraps his arms around God's leg and that he will not let go. And it says that God looks down at Jacob and he says, "You win." He didn't win by defeating God. So what was the victory? What was the victory? He won because he finally got to the point where rather than running from God, he was just going to do all that he could to hold on to God because he knew that his only hope was that God's grace would be sufficient. His only hope was that God's power would work through his weakness because Jacob couldn't do it on his own anymore. This isn't a 3-step process. This isn't a flip the switch process. I want to encourage you, and especially for those of you who are in the midst of these moments right now, I want to challenge you. Don't become an acquaintance with God because you're not willing to have the tough conversations, the painful conversations, the real conversations. Don't leave him. Wrestle through it. Hold on to the promise. Cling to the promise. There's a purpose to the pain. There's a purpose to the pain. It doesn't matter why it came in. It doesn't matter why it's there. God is going to use it, and his grace will be sufficient in it. And when you do, I believe that you will find an experience and a relationship with God that is far greater than what you had before. You'll know what Paul's talking about when he says, I've stopped fighting God in it, and I've started to walk with him through it. Will you pray with me? Father, as we look at this incredible example, as we look at this incredible example of yours, your ability to be able to take that which was meant for bad, to be able to take all of these things, no matter where they come from, and to use them for your power to work in and through them, for your grace to be able to carry us through them. Father, I pray for those who are here and find themselves in the midst of one of those moments right now. Father, I pray that as we walk through the remainder of this service, that they would begin to engage you in this, maybe in a way that they'd never have before. And rather than hiding this from you, that they would begin to actually wrestle through this with you and allow you to be able to speak into their situation, into their moment, to be able to speak into their lives, to be able to say what you said to Paul, that it may not change. The answer may be no. But don't for one second think that I don't care. Don't for one second think that I'm not here. Don't for one second think that I will not bring purpose. Don't for one second think that I will not provide the grace that you need to be able to walk through this. And don't for one second think that you're alone. Father, thank you for your promise. We cling to your promise. In Jesus' name, amen.